Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 5th of December, and I'm recording at 9:35 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time in London. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's just have a quick look at some of the highlights of the week. It's been a generally bullish period for stock markets, and there are two really important tailwinds here that I will just mention. You'll be very familiar with the first one. It's extremely accommodative monetary policy, led especially today by Japan, the European Central Bank also, and more recently coming from China. And of course, while the U.S. Fed has stopped the quantitative easing, QE purchases, it certainly hasn't sold any of those bonds, nor is it likely to. And interest rates remain at extremely low levels, as they do in most developed economies. So we have that, as I say, a very positive tailwind persisting. And then also, the less widely known or noted factor, particularly beyond the West, and that is that the U.S. midterm election, we are past that point, having had those elections last month. And what we know historically is that that has been a very bullish period generally. And also the final year before the next presidential election, historically, is up on average. And investors are hoping that that will once again be the case. And there's a good chance that it will actually be the case. Then I should mention, I said there are two factors. There's a third factor, the lower price of crude oil. Is tough on the producers, but very bullish for all the countries that import oil and all the people that use oil in the developed and developing world. Okay, so the stock market recovery here, well, I should call it, it's more than a recovery. It's just an ongoing bullish phase, has really been led by China in recent weeks. And you know that Shanghai Composite Index is now up 36.68%. It's got its nose in front of the Indian stock market, which was down a third of a percentage point today. And those are the runaway big movers. Though Wall Street has done well, but you know the S&P 500 index is only up 12.28%, and all those percentages that I've quoted to you are in U.S. dollars for comparative purposes. The European stock markets, which wobbled considerably yesterday, on the basis that maybe Mario Draghi was losing his battle with the Germans over German monetary officials, I should say, over quantitative easing, and feel that well, they've done a reassessment on that overall. And my own guess is that they're right to reassess, because I think Draghi's in charge. And I think, one, he has the intellectual clout. He can certainly has the case. He has the mandate to make. And my own feeling, I understand the German position, but I think they are a bit obsessed about the their inflation tragedy in the first half of the last century. But I think they're going to have to back down, because there are too many problems that they are currently encountering, not least in terms of just slow growth generally, but the Russian situation, the sanctions situation as well, which are costly for Germany and many other countries. Okay, government bonds, very, very quiet. The U.S. Treasury is pushed up a little bit today because we had those very good employment figures coming out here today. And that was an impressive bit of evidence. And I think it's silenced many of the people who felt that the U.S. was about to go back into some sort of slump or that deflation was gaining the upper hand, because you had strong employment, and employment is has been doing pretty well, and for a number of months now, reasonably good employment figures, but also hours worked increased, and wages were also increasing, not at anything like a scary inflationary rate, but just as a healthy rate as the economy recovers, and if more people are employed, and if they're earning a bit more, then they're going to be able to spend a bit more, and that helps to pull the economy out of the slump that it's been in for such a long period of time, as is always the case following credit crisis recessions. Commodity markets, well, they're still mostly under pressure in here. That's partly due to deflationary pressures. It's partly due to technology overall, which means that we get increase in supplies of commodities, so their commodities can be produced more effectively, more cheaply, very often, and or if not cheaply, we can, more sources of production, particularly for some of these industrial commodities, are actually located, not least within crude oil, as you've seen. And global GDP growth is not all that strong, quite clearly, but it's primarily a story of supplies, of having more supplies. Now, more on all this in a moment. But first, what's going to happen to stock markets over the medium to longer term? Well, I think that some of the disinflationary, deflationary pressures that we are actually seeing is extending the bull market cycle, and that we're going to see that continue well into 2015. Now, there are always the occasional black swans that appear. That's part of the territory. And I would, for those who aren't familiar with that term, and just define that as some sort of surprise or shock that had not been expected. Those can cause certainly temporary disruptions overall. But what I would actually fear for global stock markets more than anything else, although it wouldn't be all that bad for the global economy, would be if we had a synchronized global economy that was roaring away in a period of sustained growth and overheating, and that would be opening the door to a bear market as central banks moved in to tighten on interest rates. Well, we aren't anything near that sort of reaction from the monetary authorities. So that background remains still generally favorable. But the biggest factor, and it's something that I had forecasted in my long-term comments, particularly when talking about the potential for a secular bull market, and I've been saying, well, you'll know this for a number several years now, that there was every possibility that this long, rather difficult period of readjustment following the bursting of bubbles from 2000 onwards, and not least in 2008, that would set up the global economies and stock markets for another secular bull market. I said the leadership factors would be different, and the ones that I identified were an accelerating rate of technological innovation. Well, we've got that without a shadow of a doubt. And that helps all countries. It doesn't help the people who find their jobs replaced by smart machines, but if there's enough growth being generated, then they will soon find some other jobs. In this environment, when not so many jobs have been new jobs have been created, it's created more unemployment. But you get the point. Technological innovation is a bullish factor for the global economy, and the biggest beneficiaries of all, we all benefit from it, but the biggest beneficiaries are corporations. And the second factor that I said was absolutely crucial for a secular bull market was to see lower energy prices in real terms, inflation adjusted, in other words. And that's exactly what we are getting with a lower oil price. As you'll recall, I felt that this would happen, but I thought it would happen in the latter part of this decade, and even before 2015, even before the midpoint, we've seen a major break in the price of crude oil. And that is more of a supply story than a demand story. And actually, with commodities, if you think in terms of not just oil, but all commodities, supply is the key factor. That's what causes the big bull moves and bear moves in commodity prices generally. Whereas demand sees much, much smaller, much more gradual transitions from a little bit higher to a little bit lower in here. So we are awash in crude oil, and we also have a major battle going on, and the Saudis are determined that they're going to keep crude oil low. As I wrote and reported yesterday, because they want to weaken Iran, and they've been worried about an Iran-Iraq axis of Shiites, and so that, and they've been worrying about Iran's nuclear ambitions. Well, they're pretty much on hold here because they're going to have a tough time in here with this lower oil price. They also want to knock back Russia, and that's certainly happening in a big way. More on that in a minute. And they also want to knock out a good chunk of the U.S. shale oil. And they might have some success with that. Certainly, companies in the U.S. that are over leveraged, that I mean that they've got a fair amount of debt. Some of the smaller companies that had to pay a lot of money for sites as they were auctioned off, and they may not have the pockets or the resources on the land that they have leased. To survive a period of low oil prices for at least the medium term. So I'm not expecting a quick jump back upwards. And I also feel that going into the middle of 2015 and beyond, that it will take fears of or little or the reality of significant disruptions in supplies from oil producers. Now, that was last feared when the so-called Islamic governance here, the ISIL, when we first all really began to hear about them on front pages. And we had crude oil up at 215, briefly 216, I think, on the Brent, and there was a fear that they would knock out a number of that ISIS would knock out a number of or ISIL would knock out a number of oil installations. Well, that hasn't really happened, And as a matter of fact, the oil coming out of the Middle East has actually increased. You had far more setbacks in production back in 2007 and early 2008, leading to that spike. But we don't have that type of an environment here right now. Also, more crude oil is being produced. And I think the very success that the U.S. has had in producing its shale certainly will prompt more countries to develop their own shale capacity. I've talked about this for several years. It's been slow in coming for all sorts of reasons, as you know, but that capability is certainly there, and inevitably some more countries will produce their own shale oil, and most have the resources to produce at least some shale oil, although they may not have mastered the technology, but that can be imported. Okay. So, those two secular bull market factors are very much in place. So lower energy costs in real terms, and I haven't even touched on all the growth of the renewables. Solar, which every a year isn't going to go by for the rest of my life, in which solar capacity isn't going to be improved by the technological developments that accompany it. And I think also we're not all that far away from seeing a revival of the nuclear power industry with new nuclear, which will be safer. That is certainly capable of making a major contribution. And I've said before, 25, 30 years from now, I wouldn't be at all surprised if we actually saw nuclear fusion finally, at long last, being achieved. In my childhood, well, I should say adolescence, I remember people talking about the nuclear fusion, particularly nuclear scientists. Talking about it, and it was always 25 years away. Well, it's still 25 years away, but I think that that we can be more optimistic about this next 25 years. The point I'm trying to make, because the technological advances are now so rapid, and that is very good for GDP growth and also economies. What we also have is we have a global much more of a global economy these days. The capitalist model is won out in a very big way over the alternatives. About time too, I imagine you'll be thinking, but some of it's command capitalism, as in China, and that can be a little bit scary from time to time. But capitalism generally, it's a more efficient model, and that's what we're seeing across the world. We're seeing a rising population, so that creates more consumers, and if their economies are running on a broadly capitalistic model, then they'll have a growing middle class. These are all big secular bull market themes here. And then, of course, we have the rise of the autonomies. That's a term I coined several years ago for these semi-autonomous super multinational companies, which have outgrown their native countries. And they're big international players. The successful ones are, at any rate, and the successful ones, to be successful, they've got good governance. And the governance of some of these big autonomies is vastly superior than the governance we see within most countries, not surprisingly. So again, and this is a little bit of a throwback to a few years ago, when everybody was worried about the lack of growth and all the government debt and so on, and confusing that with the stock market. But companies are in much better shape. Their governance has improved considerably following the searing experiences in 2000 and 2001 and 2008, and they and that's just all generally positive. So what stands in the way of of the secular bull market that I've been talking about? Well, we will get a normalization of interest rates in a few years' time. It'll start a little sooner in the US, and it'll take longer in a number of other countries. But that won't really be a serious problem until we get several interest rate hikes in each of these countries, and that begins to create more competition for stock markets. But that is not a problem that I think we need to worry about now, certainly, and I don't think it'll be a problem. I'd be very surprised if it became a problem in 2015. If you want a problem for 2015, Russia is a dangerous and delicate situation. If that doesn't sound like a oxymoron here, but dangerous because of Putin and the economic meltdown that's taking place there. I've written about this so much, you know all this, and are following it on your own, of course. But what is going to be so important, do we get that? Do we get another warmonger following Putin? I posted an article from Reuters on that subject yesterday. Or do we get what is basically a liberal-minded Democrat? My choice would be Garry Kasparov, but fat chance. Okay, and they're. Again, I worry a little bit about China's government unrest, or the pressure that's rather put on some of the neighboring countries around China. But there are always worries, and people in my position and many of your positions, we have a bullish environment as we're enjoying right now. And what we do then is to worry about, well, what could go wrong? What could disrupt this? But I think overall, this remains a time to be pretty generally fully invested, and just do the sensible things, lighten in positions that accelerate way above their rising 200-day moving averages. And replace them when they come back to those levels. Okay, what about long-dated government bonds? Well, I'll spend a lot less time on that, but they've had, what, 32, 33 years of a secular bull market. You know what happens after secular bull markets end. You get secular bear market, or at least a significant cyclical bear market. And I think that the crisis that we saw following 2008 that extended the life of that bond market bull phase, the total returns are still positive. And that's including the yield on the bonds, and in addition to any price appreciation. But these are exceptionally low yields. Will we still see these yields in a decade's time? Not a chance, in my view. But we would have to have a horrendous economic outlook for that to take place, and I don't think that it's realistic to expect, let alone or have to fear for that. So, 10 years' time, I would expect government bond yields to be significantly higher. I think they'll be significantly higher in 5 years' time. So really, this is a transitional phase, with a gradual ending of the bullish period, and to be followed by a bearish period in government bonds. Investors in government bonds have done incredibly well, so they can be forgiven for feeling a little bit complacent, but just keep an eye on the price charts. They're not giving you any worries today, but that'll change at some point, and then you want to be somewhere else. And the somewhere else is very much in stock markets, in my opinion, where you can get higher yields today, and where you also have the opportunity for some significant capital appreciation. So I don't really like the bond markets. When those bond yields do begin to push up and when they start to rise significantly, let's take the US 10-year, which is at 2.3. Well, double that and a little bit more. Get it up above 5, and then it starts to become real competition for global stock markets. But obviously, we're nowhere near that level, and I don't think we're going to get anywhere near that level next year either. Now, what about currencies here? Well, the big story over the last few months has been the way the dollar has picked up quite significantly, and it's strong again in here today. And that DXY, for instance, that's a US dollar index against the European currencies, that's up to 89.358. So it's at its highest level since it's got to go back to I think well before 2011, but I haven't got it under my nose, and I'm not going to bring it up here right now, but you can see it easily enough the chart books. But the point is that the dollar, having been in a secular bear market for a very long time, is now arguably in early stages of at least a cyclical and probably a secular bull phase. I don't think it will move up hugely, partly because of the strong competitive pressures within the global economy, and that's a good thing here generally. But that would cause problems for U.S. exporters, and they would move more of their activities outside of the U.S.A. if that were to happen. I don't think the U.S. will want to see that. But the bottom line here is that right now it's still the dollar very, very strong. That will deter Janet Yellen in hiking short-term interest rates because the stronger dollar has really represents the equivalent of interest rate hikes in terms of deterring inflation. And also, she knows that she would be pouring oil on the fire of the dollar's rally if she were to raise interest rates too soon or too sharply. So I don't think that will I don't think that will happen, to repeat that point. What we need to watch out for is any currencies that become victims of dollar strength. And you've got a classically weak currency in the Japanese yen, but that's only because the yen had experienced the mother of all secular bull markets, and that really weakened Japan's economy considerably. And so they've thrown that into reverse. Interesting today, the yen has weakened further against the US dollar. Not surprisingly, it's at 121.46. So that will be good for Japan's stock market again on Monday. Japan is a favored stock market of mine, along with India and China. But if you have an investment in Japan, you really do need to hedge the currency, because this yen weakness is going to continue, and Japan is, well, I'll just give you the figures. For instance, here the Nikkei 225 is up 10% this year. That's not a whole lot compared to other markets. It's certainly respectable. It's exactly 10% this year so far in yen. But it's down 4.59% in US dollars. And I this so the point made there. Okay, looking at currencies, the best thing for the global economy would be to see, I think, relatively calm currency markets, not too much volatility or extreme moves. But you've got one that's really been weakening, and it's far weaker than the yen, and that's the Russian ruble. So that's, the Russian economy is crumbling in here, and that leads to some medium-term risks. But I've already covered that. Keep an eye out. Keep an eye on that situation. going on to the commodity markets, that leads me right into precious metals. I think that the developing part of the world is more recognizing or remembering more readily that the gold price is, or gold itself, is hard money. And it's been hard money for centuries. And gold has held its value. The value will fluctuate a lot in the short term, obviously, because it's bought and sold by people. But the gold has held its money far better than any fiat currency. And why is that? Well, because in countries with fiat currencies, the central bankers say they aren't being prudent if they aren't seeing at least an inflation rate of 2% per annum, at least 2% per annum. Well, you can imagine what that does to the purchasing power of the currency over a few decades. I mean, it reduces it hugely. That doesn't happen with hard money gold, because it's harder to increase the supply. The bears are still trying to push it down, largely central, not central banks, largely investment banks, high frequency traders. So they've been a bit of a plaything for that group for several years. But the demand is coming in. It's coming in from China, most of all, but India, another big buyer. And India has reduced some of the preventative moves from the gold market, and that will enable Indians to or encourage Indians to import purchase more gold. So again, these are not leveraged plays. They're just buying and salting it away, or locking it away. And I think that's actually going to continue. So my guess is that gold and silver are in a bottoming out stage that may be a lengthy process. But that will mean that you'll get some additional choppy volatility. But the choppy volatility after a big decline, such as we're seeing, is a sign of a two-way balance coming in. In other words, it becomes choppy because the persistent supply is suddenly met by some aggressive demand, and that leads to a struggle for a while. But since these have already fallen a long way, not least against devaluing currencies, my feeling is that it is a bottoming out process. But you know, there's a lot of competition here. The bond investors are not losing any money in real terms, so there's little interest in buying gold on their part. The equity investors are doing well enough, so gold isn't, calling out to them in any appealing way. It'll take more time, but I do think that this is a transitional stage for the precious metal markets, gradually swinging from bearish to bullish. And what else to mention? The industrial commodities. Well, I think the bear story that we hear about every single day is that China's demand has dropped as China shifts its economy away from metal bashing and exporting to developing a consumer-led economy. And that has been certainly a big factor here overall. But another big factor is technology. It's made the mining more efficient, so more of these metals can be produced more readily, more easily, and that may well keep these markets low for the lengthy medium term. In here, I don't think it'll be a whole lot longer than that, but it could persist well into 2015. But I think that then industrial metals are more likely than not to start picking up, because despite the technological advantages, that those are mostly utilized by the really big players in the mining industry, and a lot of the more marginal, less capitalized, less well capitalized, smaller mining companies are forced to cut back, or actually cut. They actually go bankrupt, and we're certainly seeing some of that actually occurring. I think I would be cautiously optimistic about that sector. I'd be surprised to see a dramatic recovery. I think that probably requires a stronger global economy overall, and then when that occurs, we'll probably get quite a sharp run up in the industrial metal prices, and also the shares that are still able to produce those metals. But I'm not holding my breath in terms of in terms of waiting for that. And I think, again, on the oil price, just to if I just mentioned foods first, that this is really a supply story. To the extent that we have climate change, if that involves a little bit of global warming, that'll probably be more favorable than unfavorable for crops generally. But 2014 has been noted for generally good weather for the grain and bean crops, and that's good. That helps to keep some of that food price inflation down. There have been certain areas which, California had a tough time, so that caused some food price inflation, tough time with their drought. We have seen a reduction in cocoa plantations, and that is firmed those prices. Same things happen to coffee. We see it also with again with beef, and but generally, in terms of the staple grains and beans, prices are much lower than they were a year ago, or 2 years ago, or even 3 years ago, and that is a good development overall for the global economy. What about crude oil? I think, as I've been saying, that this is a seminal change, and I think that oil will stay lower for longer than many people are expecting, and then there will be a move on the part of the producers to try to get it somewhat higher. But I think they'll be hard pressed to get it much above $80. And I think that it will require some sort of major threat to supplies to cause a speculative move or a buying frenzy in crude oil. And that's only an outside possibility. What we are seeing, and as I said, this is a seminal change, that energy prices in the main, the broader picture for energy prices is that they will be somewhat erratically declining in real terms for a number of years. And on that note, all the very best to all of you. Have a fantastic weekend.